This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Really busy week with us, and welcome to the KBOO Bike Show.
I'm happy to be here.
Speaking of your busy week and getting your preschoolers to school, could you tell us a little bit about your week?
Yeah, so this is a big week for us. My kids have been home with me since they were born, which is about 3 years now, and are starting at a preschool on the South Waterfront this week, which is about 3 miles and over a bridge from my house. And I am also have been doing job interviews all week. So it's been a busy week for me.
So how did you is this the first time that you've actually ridden with your kids to school, to a school?
Yes, to any school.
So how is that different than just riding them to the grocery store?
Well, the difference is that it's every day. And it's every day, whether we feel like it or not. And it's less negotiable than, say, going to kitty music time, which you can skip and it's not a big deal. But school, for them and for their teachers and for all the things we're trying to do in school, including give me time to work, is every day.
Was there recalcitrance getting there?
Not at all. Not at all. They're easier to get out of bed if they're getting out of bed and getting on the bike, at least when it's sunny outside, which it has been this week.
Oh, that's great. And I had a question. When you were planning to sell your car, once you arrived in Portland in 2009, was that an impulse decision once you arrived in Portland, or were you planning it that way?
That was the plan. So we lived for 5 years outside of Ithaca, New York, and we had an hour-long car commute. And actually, we arrived in Ithaca. We'd been living car-free in Eugene, arrived in Ithaca, spent 2 or 3 months trying to get by without a car, and then spent my first paycheck, all of it, on a car. Which was my first and only car, and then we drove that car for 5 years in Ithaca and then drove back to Portland and sold it.
Wow. How did you pay rent?
On my husband's paycheck.
It seems like a leap of faith when you're 5 months pregnant to sell your car. What was that decision process like?
I really was so done having the car that it was less about can we get by without a car and more about how will we make it work without a car. And I feel like once we had made that mental shift, it became about, well, when are we going to put the baby on a bike and how do we find a place to live somewhere that we can afford but also that we can walk and use transit and ride bikes. And I had a lot of, I'm sure that the mothers listening will sympathize, I had a lot of hip and pelvic issues during pregnancy. And so with both of my pregnancies, by the time that I was really big, riding a bike was so much more comfortable than walking anywhere that I was very, very happy to be on the bike.
How long into your pregnancy were you still riding your bicycle?
It's a funny question. With my first, I rode my bike actually to a midwife appointment and back again the day that I went into labor. And with my second, I woke up in labor and then rode my bike to the birth center to go have a baby. So all the way into pregnancy is how long I rode my bike while I was pregnant. All the way.
I can just imagine the nurses who were admitting you, like, really? Mm-hmm. Maybe we should have a bike rack closer to the front door.
I think at that point we can ask for valet parking.
It's like, just a minute, I have my U-lock in here somewhere. Oh, wait, my water just broke. That's great.
It was exactly like that.
What kinds of reactions did you get from passersby as you were particularly like biking, obviously very pregnant?
Well, it was different each time because the second time I had a toddler, I mean a 15-month-old on the bike. My kids are very close together. And so biking with a kid, with a little kid on the bike is unusual enough that I don't think my pregnancy was even noticed because I was already a mom on the bike, and that's enough of a spectacle that pregnant mom on the bike didn't add
to that.
Did that
take some
time
getting used to?
I am pretty outgoing, but there's definitely a shtick that you use at the bike rack that is, you know, you get your one-liners when people make the same comment about your bicycle or your pregnancy or your kids.
So
and I think that's true of anyone who is visible in public. I mean, I think all mothers of young children to some degree are visible in public and get comments made. You know, I have a friend with twins plus another, and she has the, oh, you look like you've got your hands full responses, because she hears, oh, you look like you've got your hands full 10 times a day.
And what does she respond?
Gosh, I don't know. It's not my one-liner.
What are your one-liners?
My big one-liner is, it's my minivan. People say, that's a big bike. It's my minivan. It works. It's cheerful.
What did your family say when you went to sell your car?
My mom was very enthusiastic. And my dad is always enthusiastic. My in-laws, we didn't tell them until it was done.
It's kind of like naming your baby, I would imagine. It's like, well, it's done now, so you might as well love it.
That's right. That's right.
So could you tell us a little bit about Kittical Mass?
Kittical Mass is a monthly family bike ride. We cycle our starting points throughout the city, and we meet usually in a park, and we go to another park or to something fun. It's between 10 and 70 people. We had 70 people last month up in North Portland.
Oh.
For a bike ride with bubbles and kites and parks. And it's really about giving families who get around by bike a chance to get together and families who are curious about getting around by bike a chance to hang out with other families who get around by bike to see what they're riding and how they manage and share strategies and tips.
So what kind of questions do you get from the bike curious potential car-free families?
I think that, I mean, I feel like the big issue for especially mothers of young children is that it's one more thing on their plate. And I feel like mothers of young children especially in the sort of mostly white, mostly middle flat class sort of Portlandia world are being told that they should already be doing 10,000 things or they're not good enough. And there's this really intense pressure of, are you teaching your child sign language or Spanish or Mandarin and doing baby swim classes and music and making all of their organic food from scratch and have you lost the baby weight yet? And, oh, by the way, did you put lipstick on this morning? And so I feel very apprehensive about telling women, especially mothers of young children, that they should be doing anything. They're already being told they have all these signals that they should be doing all of these things. And so when biking is framed as one more thing you should be doing with your kids, it's just too much and it's hard. And so I usually try to reframe these questions that are about, they're framed as questions about scheduling, but I feel like they're really questions about, well, how do I do just one more thing? And reframe them as questions of, well, what are you trying to do already that biking might actually be the answer for instead? Are you trying to get exercise? Are you trying to get more time outside with your kids? Are you trying to get, a chance to see your neighborhood differently? Well, these are things that biking can give you that you may not be able to get in your life right now. The other big questions are safety questions.
Mm-hmm. And how do you address those?
Because
that really varies depending on where they live.
Exactly.
What their
route is. And I really believe that learning to trust your instincts is important. And it's true that some places in the city are safer than others. And it's true that different children and babies have different physical abilities. And if you feel like what you're doing is challenging the norms, that's okay. But if you're feeling like what you're doing goes against your sort of spidey sense of what is safe and good for your family, that's probably not okay.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's worth paying attention to.
I love the spidey sense. If you're just joining the show, we're talking with Katie Proctor, car-free mom and relauncher of Kittical Mass. We'd like to open up because we know there's a lot of moms out there and a lot of people who love their moms. So if you have a question for our in-house experts on getting moms on bike, feel free to call 503-231-8187. So, Katie, I want to turn the conversation just a little bit. What resources would you recommend to bike curious moms if people are saying, this is great, I can get to the store, you know, it's only 15 blocks away, but how do I do X, Y, or C? What are some of those questions that you hear specifically, and are there resources out there that can help people make a good decision?
There really are. I think that for when I was pregnant, I spent a lot of time surfing the sort of mom bike blog network, and there are a lot of them, or parenting bike blog network, and there are a lot of them, and you know, you can Google around them, some of my favorites for just data resources are Totsicle, which is a pediatrician named Julian up in Seattle who rides with his kids.
Totsicle?
Totsicle,
like a popsicle?
Popsicle, but with children.
I love that Kelly Hansen, who's just about to join in a few minutes as our second guest, is writing down these as you're talking. I'm sorry, so Totsicle is one.
There is Full Hands, which is a mom. Gosh, I think she's in, well, she's back east somewhere, and she has twins, plus one. And there's my blog, which is not kept up to date, sadly, but does involve all of our early getting the kids on the bike logistics stuff, and that's at civilizedconveyance.blogspot. There's also Critical Mass, which, if there is one in your community, is a great resource, and our Portland Critical Mass is criticalmasspdx.org. And then the other place that I think is really amazing for resources are the bike shops. And the, I think going to Clever Cycles and saying, these are the ages of my children, and these are the bicycles I have right now, what do I need to do? They know. They've done it before. They've done it for a lot of people before, and they can help you do it. Also, Splendid Cycles, Joe Bike, here in Portland, we have three cargo bike specialist bike shops in the city, which is amazing.
Yeah.
Also, I mean, Kelly will talk about the Community Cycling Center and the resources that they have for helping you figure out what you need to do. And I know the city also has some Women on a Bike programs, which I imagine extend to women with children on bikes, but I don't actually know.
Yes. Where else is Critical Mass that you know of?
Critical Mass was first, the original Critical Mass is in Eugene. I know that there is also Critical Mass Seattle, Tacoma, Washington, D.C., Chicago, and then there are a couple international locations, but they're in small cities, and I don't actually know. If you go to just criticalmass.org, all of the locations that have or have ever had a Critical Mass are listed, as well as resources for starting your own if you live somewhere where you want there to be one and there's not.
Yeah, what is it like to start your own Critical Mass? Is it easy?
It's logistics. It's marketing. It's getting the word out and making sure that the people who wish that there was a thing like Critical Mass actually hear about it when you decide it's happening. Mm-hmm. Other than that, it's as big as you want it to be. It's let's ride to the park, or let's get six different corporate sponsors and close a bunch of roads and have an event. But I think that it works very well as a grassroots, free publicity, word of mouth, posters in bike shops, posters at the grocery store. People come.
Mm-hmm. Eugene recently had a kind of a big anniversary for their Critical Mass, did they
not? I think
it
was their fifth year.
Yeah, I think so. It sounded awesome. Like, I saw balloons on the backs of bike racks, and it was just like, I wish I was in Eugene, and maybe I could, like, enlist a five-year-old that ideally the other parents know that I'm taking out.
You would not be the first to borrow a child for the sake of riding with a Critical Mass ride.
Katie, what is Sunday Parkways like for a parent? Have you ridden Sunday Parkways yet with your children?
I have. We've done almost all of the Sunday Parkways. Me pregnant, and then me with my kids.
How does it feel different?
Gosh, I'm not sure what to say.
I thought maybe you were going to cry.
It's wonderful. I think that for me, since my kids, my last month was actually my 3-year-old's first time ever on his own bike on a group ride. like on his own bike, not on the sidewalk. He rode about four blocks of critical mass and then got to the top of a hill that was a little over. I mean, he doesn't even have pedals on his bike. He's on his little scoot bike. He got to the top of a hill and he looked down and he just said, no, that's too steep. My feet are my brakes and it is too steep and I need to get back onto my mom's bike. Hmm. So I don't yet have that experience of this is the space where it's safer for my kids to ride on their own bikes. My kids are on my bike all the time, and they're on my bike every day. Mm-hmm. And so I have a feeling that this year, and probably especially the year after that, when I have two kids on their own wheels, that'll be a bigger deal for mm-hmm. us.
So one of my colleagues just started putting her baby on her bike, and she says he just hates the helmet. That's what she thinks. He doesn't talk yet. Mm-hmm. But he just screams and screams and screams, and she feels terrible, but she thinks it's the helmet. And everyone tells her he'll get used to it.
Can I ask how old he is?
6, 7, 8 months.
Okay. I mean, I think that there's of course, equipment issues to address. Is this the best helmet? Is this seat or trailer or whatever the best arrangement for the kid to be in? Both of my kids went through a period where they hated their helmet. And they had both, they were a little older than that. So they, up until each of them was 9 months old, we had them actually reclined in a car seat mm-hmm. in a cargo box on the bike. And so they weren't wearing helmets. They weren't wearing helmets. They were strapped into car seats and they were reclined. And a car seat helmet would have been unsafe for their neck.
I think helmets are not recommended for children of below a certain age, right?
In the U.S. there are no standards for children under one on bicycles. Mm-hmm. The official recommendations are that children under one should not be on bicycles in any way, shape, or form. My children started riding on the bicycle at 7 and 3 weeks old, respectively. So I obviously took other strategies with my kids. But after 9 months, they started riding upright in kids' seats on the bike with helmets on. And around 18 months, each of them hit a point where they didn't want to wear the helmet. And my strategy with that was that if they wouldn't let me put on the helmet and we needed to go somewhere, we walked the bike. And we walked the bike until they put the helmet on.
Oh, wow. I guess they don't like walking the bike?
They don't like walking
it's
the bike.
Boring.
It's boring and it's slow. So there was one day where we walked, I think, a mile and a half with a screaming kid and no helmet. But it was one time and it was one day and it was a hard day. But
wow.
Pretty much put an end
a
to
lesson
that
was learned.
Tantrum. Yeah, exactly.
And congratulations for getting through it.
Oh, man.
You are listening to the KBOO Bike Show, and we've been talking with special guest Katie Proctor, car-free mom. I'd like to introduce another guest speaker to the show, Kelly Hansen. Kelly Hansen helps programs such as Create a Commuter, Bike Camp, and Bike Club stay in motion as the program manager for the Community Cycling Center. She joined the center in November of 2012 from the youth development nonprofit Campfire Columbia, where she developed and implemented programs that fit the community needs of East Portland. She is passionate about social justice and playing outside. Her favorite part of working at the Community Cycling Center is being around creative, caring, and industrious people, as they remind her of her cycling hero, the late Anne Musto, a former educator and ever-adventurer. Kelly Hansen, thank you for joining us, and welcome to the KBOO Bike Show.
Thank you. I'm happy to be here.
So for those of us, because not everyone, we have a lot of listeners outside of Oregon, can you tell us what the Community Cycling Center is?
Yeah, gladly. The Community Cycling Center is a nonprofit that was founded in 1994, and we work to broaden access to cycling and help people stay connected to their communities by bike.
Great. And why did who started the Create a Commuter program, and what is it?
The Create a Commuter has been around for a long time in different ways. For the last about 10 years, it's been a program that partners with different workforce development agencies or social services to get folks who might not be able to access a bike otherwise on a bicycle and using it for practical means to get to work. And then what we found out is that folks end up using it for more than just getting to work, such as taking their kids to school and going grocery shopping and just accessing services in their community.
And the Create a Commuter program, it's basically a workshop, you know, that's time definite, you know, for a specific
they're referred by specific agencies. Is that correct?
That's correct. So, for example, we ran a workshop in the Hacienda community where folks signed up through their different – they signed up through the Workforce Development and Leadership Development Program, Verde, and they attended a five-hour workshop, and through that workshop they earned a bicycle. And so they walked away from that workshop with the basic skills they would need to be a commuter and a fully outfitted commuter bike, including a U-lock and lights and fenders.
And so what do you cover in that workshop period?
Well, as you can guess, 5 hours is a long time, but it's not nearly enough to learn everything you would need to be a commuter. So we like that workshop to be an exposure to a lot of different topics and an opportunity for folks to build confidence while they're biking. So we start out with a personal safety check and a mechanical safety check. We do a bike fitting, making sure that their bikes fit them. And we do a short ride, just getting them kind of acclimated to their bicycles. And then we also do a TriMet rack practice where they can practice bringing their bicycle on a TriMet rack. And we talk about multimodal transportation. And we also teach how to do a wheel removal and tire patch. And a little bit of route planning. And then in the second half of the workshop, I know 5 hours.
I was
right?
Like, that's the first hour.
In the second half of the workshop, we usually take a longer ride that lasts anywhere from 30 minutes to an hour. And we map those routes based on the needs that the folks expressed in their applications for the program.
And Kelly, do you get any moms in these programs?
Yeah, we do get moms. What we found is that a lot of times, women prefer an invitation to participate, so we ask the agencies sometimes specifically to recruit women. In our 2011-2012 fiscal year, we were able to get 50-50 for women and men. And for moms, we found that a lot of moms are also signing up for these programs. For example, that Hacienda workshop I was talking about had 14 out of 15 participants were women,
wow.
And most of those women were moms with young children. And on their pre-applications, a lot of them expressed that they wanted to take their kids to school. Some of their kids had received bicycles through our holiday bike drive.
Mm-hmm.
And so we mapped our route for the longer ride to go to the it was in the Culley neighborhood. So we biked out to the Sacagawea Head Start school. And then we also went to the grocery store and then back.
Mm-hmm. Oh. You also mentioned that we were talking yesterday that you had a similar class from ERCO that was primarily women. Is that correct?
Oh, no, actually, our ERCO workshop had a lot of men in it.
Oh!
Yeah. We did have some women as well.
So ERCO is the Immigrant and Refugee Community Organization. What is Hacienda? You've mentioned that this workshop was at Hacienda.
Yeah, Hacienda CDC is a community development corporation. They work a lot with housing specifically, and they also work with developing the community and making sure that folks, mostly immigrants and mostly Latinos, can access services and have a smooth transition into Portland life. And we actually partner with a bike committee at Hacienda called ABC, which is Andando Bicicletas in Cali. And that's a committee also mostly women and mostly mothers who join the committee, not as cyclists, but as mothers interested in making a safer community for their children and developing their own leadership potential.
And so are you leading these workshops in English, or are you leading them in other languages?
Most of the Create a Commuter workshops are in English. The one that we led at Hacienda was in Spanish.
Mm-hmm.
And then the ERCO workshops are pretty amazing. We usually have several different translators there. So like, I'll teach in English, and then it'll be translated.
There's a chorus of languages.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. That's pretty amazing.
And do you encounter women who rode bicycles in the country, in their country of origin, and are getting back to that? Or for most of them, is this a very new thing?
I think that it really varies. And in that workshop, I don't always get to hear their personal stories.
Mm-hmm.
What I can say is they all have to let us know the last time they were on their bicycles. So at that Hacienda workshop, I had a woman who hadn't been on a bike in 20 years.
Wow.
Which was pretty cool. And it's really fun to get them fitted to the bike, and then get them out into that first ride where they're readjusting to riding a bike.
So what were those first moments for her?
Nervous, and it was really cool. That workshop at Hacienda was amazing because a lot of those women had been on the bike committee but they didn't own bikes. They joined it for the community development. And so they had been talking about bikes for like 6 months in this committee, and they finally got to join this workshop. So they were pretty dedicated to bicycling and nervous but excited and very supportive of each other.
It sounds like of the moms that I know, a big issue is load carrying capacity. Like, how are you? Because you have all of the mom accoutrement as well as the kid proper, you know, and like going to the grocery store. How do you deal with that?
Yeah, that's a great question. And that's something we encounter a lot. We outfit our Create a Commuter bikes with heavy duty back racks. So the women have the opportunity to have that rack and load it up. Unfortunately, we don't have enough time to teach all the different ways to carry things on bicycles. In the past, I know we've helped a few participants get outfitted with trailers for their bikes for carrying children. And we also bring a bucket pannier and an instructional kit. I'm not sure how many people are actually able to go home and make a bucket pannier, but they know it's out there. More often, I see folks putting milk crates on the back of their bikes on top of their racks.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
Another issue is costumes, because I had done some transportation options workshops with the Immigrant Refugee Community Organization for their pre-employment training program, and one of the issues that some women brought up was, culturally specific costumes, you know, their clothing, and how they would deal with that on a bicycle.
Yeah, for sure. I think it's great that you noticed that. We at the Community Cycling Center want people to know that dress shouldn't be a barrier to cycling. And so we do a personal safety check where we talk about especially the bike and different things that could get caught in the drivetrain or the ways that you want to be safe, how to fit a helmet over a headscarf or fit a helmet over hair that is a certain way that you don't want to take down or... So fitting the helmet over whatever you have on your head and talking about different potential hazards, but then you wear what you wear, and it shouldn't be a reason not to bike.
Right. You are listening to the KBOO Bike Show here on KBOO 90.7 in Portland on the web www.kboo.fm. Please stay with us for the second half of our show about moms on bikes.
Once I was a big apple water. I was in the desert, I wasn't high, I wasn't hiding, man. Saw you turn, turn away. Water came down, hit the dry ground. Lost all the facts, slipped through the cracks, spread around. Trees, the aspens at the willows weep.
Thank you for staying with us for the second half of the KBOO Bike Show. We are talking about moms on bikes. If you have a story or a question regarding moms on bikes, please feel free to call the KBOO Bike Show at 503-231-8187. So for the second half of the KBOO Bike Show, we will continue our conversation with Kelly Hansen of the Community Cycling Center, as well as Katie Proctor, car-free mom extraordinaire. And over the break, something magical happened, and that was critical mass meeting Community Cycling Center. So I just wonder, what were y'all talking about? And let's just continue that conversation.
Well, Katie and I were discussing different options to connect our programs, and I was saying how a lot of times parents and families of kids who have gone through our summer bike camps want a place to ride with their kids. A lot of times the kids learn all these skills in our bike camps, like how to signal and safely go through an intersection and how to ride on the road. And they get home and the parents haven't always learned those skills yet.
And I was talking about how we, with Critical Mass, really make an effort to move around the city every month, and that we've had some really good rides out in East Portland, but that for me, sort of my core network is in close in Portland, and we're always looking for ways to reach out to other folks. But what I particularly love about what Kelly was saying is that they're doing this ride leader training with some of these moms that they've been working with, and I actually think I'm not a big fan of throwing people in entirely unprepared, but I love throwing people in to the absolute edge of their sort of comfort zone, because I think that that's when you really get to see people shine and sort of take ownership of their own situation. And so I love the idea of having women who have just learned how to lead rides, leading critical mass rides and leading group rides for their kids out in the community. It's so fun to ride with a bunch of really eager 7-year-olds. And I've got to say, in Cully in particular, there's a lot of unpaved roads, mm-hmm. which I know adult cyclists often find really annoying. 7-year-olds think they're awesome.
So in Cully, there are a bunch of unpaved roads, but there's also one very new, very nice road, Cully Boulevard. And Kelly, you mentioned taking your workshop participants on rides. Do you ride them down Cully Boulevard?
We did. So our route started near the housing on Killingsworth, near where it meets Portland Boulevard. We went up 72nd past the Sacagawea Head Start, and then we went over to the grocery store on Prescott and Cully, and then we rode back on Cully Boulevard. We try to give people different experiences. Mm-hmm. This is how you ride in a bike lane. This is how you have to take a lane of traffic sometimes. This is how you would ride on a neighborhood greenway.
And this is how you ride on a world-class cycle track. Uh-huh, uh-huh. Cully Boulevard is the only European-style and European-quality cycle track in the whole city. Do you notice anything about the way women or children ride on it and how it's different from riding on the street? Do they notice it?
I think that it takes a little getting used to because of the way the cars are parked next to it, and not trusting yet that the cars know how to deal with it, mm-hmm. is something I've noticed, people looking over their shoulder a lot. Like, is a car going to turn in front of me? But it feels fantastic. It feels very protected. And when we were on that ride, that was the downhill portion of our ride. So everyone loved it. Yeah. It's fantastic. Oh, I just have to sit on my bike.
Speaking of, what do you think in the world of transportation could make cycling easier for moms? Like, if you had a magic wand and you were waving it over a mechanic or a planner, you know, or an advocate, what would be your wish?
Well, I would say safe communities that can be connected. So having communities that can be connected, that aren't too spread out, that are walkable and bikeable. And then as far as bike shops, having approachable bike shops, having people asking the correct questions and not making assumptions about anyone who comes into the shop.
Mm-hmm. And Katie,
I think here in Portland, there's always more to be done, but I think we are really very fortunate to have the bikeways we do and the connectivity that we do. And I think the biggest deterrent to riding a bike right now is people in cars, and knowing that people aren't paying attention, knowing that people are hostile, are shouting out their windows, that those sorts of interactions, which are rare. I mean, here they are really unusual. I get, you know, I'm on my bike every day with my kids. I get maybe once a month a bad interaction, but they are sticky.
Yeah.
And if your bad interaction, if you're new to biking with your kids and your bad interaction is on your second day and not your 60th day, I think that that sticks with you in a really negative but can be really overwhelming sort of way.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that those cultural issues of car-bike conflicts and of suspicion and hostility of wanting to ride a bike pregnant or wanting to ride a bike with kids, those are the big issues to me.
Right.
And something I've heard from older people is that, well, they lived through the 70s when this country had an epidemic of traffic death. And the roads are actually safer now. But they were taught that it's very dangerous to be in the street. And so when they see younger people take their children and their babies in the street, they get very angry
mm-hmm.
because they think that's a terrible, reckless decision. And,
yeah.
and they don't know that it's actually much safer than when they had children or when they were children.
Mm-hmm. I feel like we could be talking about this all hour and or for the rest of the day, and I wish we could. But we are going to move on to actually a pre-recorded piece. I just want to thank both of you, Katie Proctor and Kelly Hansen, for being with us today. You are listening to the KBOO Bike Show. We have been talking with Kelly Hansen of the Community Cycling Center, as well as Katie Proctor, car-free mom extraordinaire. We will turn now to our third guest, my mom, Donna Routh. Donna is a recently retired professor of nursing at Linfield College School of Nursing. She is a longtime resident of the Portland metropolitan region, but only recently began cycling within it. Donna has two children, me and my brother, and two adorable grandchildren, Rosabelle and Riley. Riley has been the one to prevent her attendance today. So she's babysitting him, but joined me last night to talk about her re-sparked love affair with the bicycle.
You asked me to talk about the process that I went through to get my bicycle a few years ago, and so I said, okay, I would.
For the audience, this is Donna Routh.
I grew up in a little town in Iowa until I was 12 years old, and then we moved to Southern California, and I went to high school there. Then I went to college in San Francisco, and then I worked in San Francisco for 4 years, and actually I met your father in San Francisco, and then ended up in Oregon because he's an Oregon native. And so he wanted to come back home. And I didn't really like California that well. San Francisco was wonderful, but I didn't really like California that well. So that was fine.
Of all of those places, where was your first bike in Humboldt, Iowa?
Or was yes, it was in Humboldt, Iowa.
Can you talk about it?
I can't remember exactly how old I was, but it was a powder blue Schwinn bicycle, and it was beautiful. And our family didn't have a lot of money, and there were six kids, so this was really special.
Were you the first one in the family to get a bicycle?
No, but I was the second of the oldest. My older sister had a bicycle, but this was pretty neat because it was powder blue. It was gorgeous. Just a day or so after I got the bicycle, the very first day I got the bicycle, somebody who was a friend in the neighborhood, wanted to take it for a ride, so I let them. And they fell, and they put the first little dent in it, which I was just devastated about. But I got over that. Then the next thing that happened with my bicycle was, not very long afterwards, I got the mumps. And I was home not feeling very well. So one of my younger brother took the bicycle and rode to go swimming at the swimming pool. And the bike got stolen.
Oh, no.
And I was devastated. I was home with the mumps with my beautiful blue bicycle having been stolen.
Did you ever get it back?
Oh, yes. That's one thing about living in a little town. Is that he told all of his friends and everybody was looking for my bicycle, and I got it back.
Who took it? Did you ever find
it? I don't remember that part, but I do remember that I got it back. And it was before I got over the mumps, so I didn't lose any real riding time.
And did you ride it much?
I rode it all the time. I mean, that was the major transportation for all the kids in that little town.
When you moved to California, did you continue?
Oh, yeah. We lived in a town south of Los Angeles itself, a town called Southgate, and I used to take it all over the place. I think that bicycle knew its way to the park because there was a park about a mile away, and I used to take a lot of swimming lessons, and there was a swimming pool there, and all of us went swimming, and so I took my bike back and forth all the time.
Wow. And how about when you went to college?
Well, I went to college in San Francisco, and a bicycle is not Well, there wasn't really any place to keep one in the dorm. And it wasn't really cool.
Why wasn't it cool?
Well, it wasn't cool then to ride a bike in San Francisco. Besides that, up and down those hills would have been a real challenge anyway.
It's a topographical challenge.
Yes, definitely. We had a lot of, we used public transportation. We got on the buses and used the cable cars and a lot of other things. And we walked a lot around the city. Mm-hmm. And so we just didn't really use a bike for a lot of years.
When was the next time you had a bicycle that you would say you used regularly?
Well, the next time I really had a bicycle was when you talked me into getting a bicycle a few years ago.
Oh, wow.
I'd rented bicycles in between times to do some things, but that was really the first time I really... Oh, yeah, I did have another bike. Your father got me a used bike, and it was okay, and we took some bike rides.
Was that Grover?
Yeah, Grover.
The purple Peugeot.
Right. Grover didn't really fit me that well. But, you know, we used to take some bike rides, so I didn't feel that he was really my bike like the powder blue bicycle was.
Well, I felt like Grover was, because I inherited it from you, and I just have to say I definitely felt that Grover was my bicycle.
Well, that's good. Grover did provide a lot of miles for our family.
That's right.
But like I said, the frame was maybe a little too tall for me. Mm-hmm. And that's probably why really feel that comfortable on him.
No, it was kind of tall. You got back on a bicycle, what,
About five years ago.
So what were some of the, because we had been talking about it a while, and what were some of your concerns?
Well, some of the concerns were, it had just been a long time. And so I was a little concerned about riding again. And I wanted something that was kind of stable. We did have a bike, I don't know whose it was, but there was a bike at the house. So I took it out and did some practice laps around the neighborhood.
I didn't know that.
And practiced how to turn on it in a cul-de-sac a couple of blocks from our house.
And this was in outer East Portland.
Right. It was in Park Rose. Right. And so I felt, well, hey, you know, this is kind of fun. So when you started talking about a bike, I thought, you know, I think I'd like one. So that's when I decided to get one, and I decided that I had this daughter who would help me pick one out.
Oh, it was great. And you had, if I remember correctly, you had some pretty specific criteria.
Well, I wanted something that was stable, but I still wanted to be able to ride it on the street. So, and I also wanted a woman's step-through bike because I thought that would be easier getting on and off. But I'm not sure I'd do that again.
Why not?
Because I found that I really don't use that part. I just get on it pretty conventionally.
Mm-hmm. Like with your right leg kicking over the saddle.
So, but I really enjoy my bike. And we got a Janus commuter. Mm-hmm. And when I gave you my criteria, you went to talk to Corey at the bike store.
That's right. And I also remember there was one other criterion, and that was, I remember it had to be safe. It had to be comfortable. And that,
yes.
You know, we're talking about the saddle, and the pedals.
Those awful saddles that are so awful.
What makes an awful saddle?
A hard one that when you get off it, you feel like you really didn't enjoy the ride as much as you might have enjoyed it. And my bike's saddle is really pretty comfortable.
And I remember the safe part, like, I think, I forget who it is, it might be Trek that calls it flat foot technology.
Yeah, probably.
That you're able to get off and you don't have to feel like you're tiptoeing when you take your foot off the pedal, mm-hmm. that the pavement is right there. And I remember one other very specific, very important criterion, and that was that it was red.
Yeah, I thought a red bike would really look kind of neat.
And does it?
Because it's bright and colorful and people see it and they're less likely to run over me.
Do you feel that this has indeed come to pass?
Well, I think it's a neat bike, neat-looking bike. Nobody's really done it, you know, aimed at me, so.
That you know of.
Yeah.
So we went together to Corey's shops, Seven Corner Bicycles on 20th and Powell. And can you talk about just that experience? Or?
Well, you had already told him, so he had a couple of suggestions. So I tried a few different bikes and rode around the neighborhood. And there was one that I really liked, but I think the frame was just, I can't remember if it was a little too tall or too short, but it didn't fit me. So he ordered another one, and when I went back and came in, it fit just fine.
Oh, that's great.
And I rode around at it, and I thought, this is the bike, and I really liked it. Oh, and we went to REI, and you helped me pick out a helmet as well.
Oh, that's right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because the accoutrement, you were also talking about some of the accessories that that help make you feel safe and happy. Could you talk a bit about those?
Well, first of all, a bike helmet. I mean, that I got that before I actually got my own bike. And this one that this other bike that I was playing around with a little bit, I wanted a helmet. Mm-hmm. Because, well, you know, you got to wear a helmet.
We should probably mention that my mom is also a recently retired professor of nursing who has spent her share of time in the intensive care unit looking at what happens when people don't wear a bicycle helmet.
Yes, or bicycle helmets or motorcycle helmets or any of the safety gear and what a difference it makes. You know, most injuries are fairly, you can recover from them. Head injuries are a different story, so... that's why I think the helmets are so incredibly important. Mm-hmm. That's why we got it. And you helped me pick one out because it had been a long time since I'd looked at helmets.
Mm-hmm. And what else, what other accessories did you?
Well, I wanted a mirror so that I could see back. And that was kind of a challenge because the bike we have, that I have, what do you call those? The handlebars that I have on it?
Oh, the mustache?
Yeah, the mustache handlebar, which I like. You know, I'm not going to race a bike, so I didn't really want a drop handlebar. And I didn't really want this straight across. Mm-hmm. And this is a really nice option. The problem is that it was a little more challenging to have a rear view mirror. So I did find one that's several inches across, and it's oval. And you attach it with a piece of Velcro. And it works great as long as it is lined up in a way that you can see. So I have to adjust the Velcro fairly frequently.
Like en route?
I usually try before I get going. But I also decided then that maybe I should just get a little rear view mirror for my helmet. And I did that about a year later. And so I actually used both of them.
Oh, nice. All right. And I also remember you have a bell and a rear rack.
Yeah. And the rear rack, I don't use a real lot, except it's really kind of nice if I want to take, like, maybe a jacket or something like that, because I just take a little bungee cord and strap it on, or if I want to take a purse with me if I'm going someplace. And I also have a bike lock, of course, but I find I don't use that much because I don't usually leave my bike someplace. I pretty well go for a ride.
Mm-hmm. Well, I remember you mentioning shortly after you got your bike, you started riding it to Curves.
Oh, yes.
The gym.
I would ride from my house, from our Harson Park Road to the Curves, and then, but they didn't have a bike rack where I could lock it up. So I told them that I really, you know, we needed to do something about that. So what they did was I used to put my bike in the back room. And what I noticed was, after a while, another bike or two would kind of join mine. And now we've since moved from Park Rose, so I don't know if they have graduated to a bike rack or not.
We should go back and check.
Yeah.
I have to say, getting you on a bicycle is quite possibly my greatest advocacy achievement. I feel like you have, if you just have a few women who are moms and are delightful and people love them in the neighborhood, and you see them on bikes, you know, your work is done.
Well, one of the most fun rides was there was a group of women that would periodically get together and cook together. But one time we decided we were going to take a bike ride together. So we got together at one of the women's house in...
Lad's Edition.
Lad's Edition, right. And took off on our bicycles. And a couple of the people hadn't been on bikes in years, and they borrowed one. We had great fun. And we went down.
You got to show them how it was done. It's like,
well, no, actually, Sandra did a better job of that because she really biked a lot. So we went down the Springwater Corridor and went down to Oaks Park and went by the bird sanctuary. And it was a really delightful day. Of course, then we came back and had to have wine and cheese and hors d'oeuvres to celebrate.
A time-honored bicycling tradition.
But it was fun. And actually, it makes me think I'd like to do some more things, more of those kinds of things now.
And, you know, speaking of now, you live in Washington County.
Yeah. When we were living in Park Rose, it was really easy to bike around the neighborhood because we lived in an area with a big enough area that didn't have busy streets. And so I biked around the neighborhood a lot and actually could cross 122nd and get to the bike trail or the bike path that went along the Banfield. And mm-hmm. so you did that sometimes. And I really enjoy where we're living now, and we live in the Beaverton, Loloa area. And I enjoy it for a lot of reasons, except where we are, to get out of it, it's really close to 185th. And frankly, that's beyond my comfort level. It's a busy street, and people don't pay that much attention. And I have found that I can, what I do is I bike on the sidewalk up to another neighborhood and go biking there. Mm-hmm. And I just, this summer, I think I'm going to try to find some of the bike paths, because I know there are some bike paths. Mm-hmm. In fact, I think that there's a bike path near where our grandchildren now live.
Mm-hmm. And at least Rosabelle has a bicycle.
Yes, she has a bicycle. And so she and I can take bicycle rides
That's
together.
Right. We have some engineers and planners that listen in on this show. What would you ask of them to help make your biking experience better and that you feel more comfortable and confident in biking around, particularly Washington County?
You know, I don't, even just driving around, I don't find the places that there are in parts of Multnomah County where there are streets that are designated as more bike friendly, and where those of us who are maybe a little intimidated about riding would feel more comfortable.
So you would hope for something, I think they call them neighborhood greenways in
okay.
Portland, to see something similar in
Right,
in Washington
I would
County.
Enjoy that very much, because some of the busy streets, especially 185th is pretty busy.
Oui.
And that's like I said, that is way beyond my comfort level. Mm-hmm.
It's pretty far beyond my comfort level, and I use it to see you guys, so I can appreciate that.
So I can't go to the curves I go to now mm-hmm. because I have to get crossed 185th, and there really isn't any place with any kind of a light within, it's about a quarter of a mile to get to one of those places,
no.
probably a little more than that to get to someplace like that.
Well, Donna Rouse, a.k.a. Mom, thank you very much for telling us about your biking adventures. And I
thank
hope,
you.
I'm looking forward to Sunday Parkways this year.
Yes. I am too. That was, we went to the first Sunday Parkways together.
That's right.
North Portland. And that was, I thought, one of the most enjoyable experiences because it was so family friendly. There were all these kids and families, and it was delightful.
And this year you get to go with your granddaughter.
Yes.
Well, thank you, Mom.
Go on. Go on, go on and find your light. Now go on, it's all right. We all feel something.
You've been listening to the KBOO Bike Show with music by Elephant Revival. I forgot to mention at the middle of our station break was Drop, which was in honor of water breaking for moms. That was Donna Routh that you just heard. She ended on talking about Sunday Parkways. Want to remind that in honor of Mother's Day, Mother's Day this year is also Sunday Parkways, and that's in Outer East Portland. So you can look portlandonline.com or sundayparkways.org for more information and the route. We're on the air the first Wednesday of every month. Our show is generously edited by Josh Hetrick and archived by Portland Transport, online at bikeshop.portlandtransport.com. You can also find recent episodes free on iTunes. The Bike Show is produced by Tori Bortman, Michelle Poyero, and myself, Steph Routh. We'd like to thank our in-studio engineer, Kurt Lauer. Underestimate his awesomeness at your peril. We'll be back next month with more news and views from the bike world. Work hard, be happy, and ride your bike, people.
I know, we're here to sow some words and hope. Let go, boundless fertile hearts and endless fields.
This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members, and a grant from The Garden Spout, specializing in indoor gardening equipment, including horticultural lighting, environmental control, hydroponic and organic nutrients, and pest control. The Garden Spout is located at 4532 Southeast 63rd, just south of Foster in Portland. Information at 503-788-GROW. You are listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM, 91.9 FM Hood River and the Gorge, 100.7 FM Corvallis and Albany. The time is 11:59. Coming up at 12 o'clock noon, it's time for Jazz Lives with your host, Nick Geffro.
Tune in Wednesday, May 1st at 6 p.m. for the monthly episode of Treasures from the KBOO Vault. This month, we'll listen to Ursula K. Le Guin, Portland-based writer and all-around cultural icon. We'll hear an interview done in 1993 at the release of the book Blue Moon Over Thurman Street, and we'll hear her read a story recorded in September 1992 from Sea Road. That's this Wednesday, May 1st at 6 p.m., here at your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
Station Navigators Report, April 30th, 2013. Some of you have heard me talk about the need for change at KBOO and why we find ourselves at this crossroads. You may have also heard some of the actions underway to set KBOO on a course towards long-term stability and sustainability. Change is hard, filled with emotion, and requires doing things that are challenging and difficult. But the potential for KBOO to better fulfill our mission and support the evolving needs of our diverse neighborhoods is within our reach. The KBOO Foundation Board of Directors has called a meeting to discuss the current changes at KBOO, provide historic context for the problems we are facing, and provide details of how I, the station navigator, intend to maximize financial resources, build needed infrastructure, and create the foundation for future stability and growth. If you care about KBOO and are interested in hearing details of the plans underway, straight from the horse's mouth, you are invited to attend this conversational meeting. There will be ample time for questions and answers. It takes place Saturday, May 4th, 1 to 4 p.m., Tabor Space, 5441 Southeast Belmont Street in Portland. Thanks, and I hope to see you there.
This is KBOO News at Noon for May 1st, 2013.
Democratic Senator Ron Wyden and ultra-conservative anti-tax activist Grover Norquist will join forces seeking to defeat a proposed internet sales tax bill that is gaining momentum. The two have become unusual allies because of the Marketplace Fairness Act would allow states to collect sales taxes on internet items purchased by residents from retailers in other states. Full Senate approval is expected on May 6. Norquist, leader of the Americans for Tax Reform, opposes the act because it is a tax, because he opposes any new taxes, and because this represents an unfair burden on taxpayers in the states required to collect the tax. Wyden opposes the bill, seeing it as an unfair burden on small business, requiring them to collect a tax for businesses in states where the businesses collecting the tax don't even have a presence. A tough fight is expected.
The latest data shows that more than half of the children living in Marion County, Oregon, in 2011, were from low-income families, and almost a third lived in poverty. The data also reflects a number of troubling trends, even as the economy recovers. An additional 21,800 children statewide slipped into poverty last year. Of all the children living in Oregon in 2011, 23.4% were living in poverty. Marion County has also climbed above statewide trends, showing proportionately higher instances of child abuse and neglect, and a higher percentage of low-income children. Many of these results can be traced back to the stress poverty has on families. Now, mandatory budget cuts are threatening many of the support programs designed to relieve these situations.
the techniques for analyzing evidence in rape cases, as well as the understanding of the psychological effects of sexual assault on the victim, have evolved tremendously over the last decade. However, there is still a wide difference in individual response by those involved in the treatment, policing, prosecution, and defense of this crime. The Justice Department, accordingly, has issued a new set of national guidelines for forensic medical examination in cases of sexual assault. The purpose is to ensure a set standard for care exists when rape victims seek help. While the standards will be voluntary for public and private institutions, they will be mandatory for federal prisons and the military. In the latter situations, the victim's physical and emotional needs will take precedence over criminal justice considerations. These proposed changes are clearly a product of the poor performance by military and prison institutions to claims of rape by women in these environments.
The socialist-controlled Senate in France approved the most critical article of a draft law that would legalize same-sex marriage. The bill removes opposite gender as a condition necessary for marriage. The legislation also allows for adoption by same-sex couples. Both houses of the French Parliament have already approved the bill in its first reading. President François Hollande already endorses the legislation. If the bill passes, it will make France the 14th country to allow same-sex marriage. Right-wing leaders in this largely Catholic country oppose the legislation, and recent weeks have seen the outbreak of violent demonstrations against gays and gay marriage. Government officials are alarmed by the size of the demonstrations, with crowds numbering in the hundreds of thousands. If the legislation is approved, a mass protest is planned for May 26, seeking to have the legislation withdrawn.
County commissioners in Multnomah voted unanimously last Thursday to tighten gun control laws in the county. New legislation will make it a crime to carry loaded guns in public and to fire a gun in the county, except in designated places and on private property.
This is Diane Erickson and Patrick Wilson with the KBOO Noon News in Portland, Oregon. Tune in every night at 5 o'clock for more local, national, and international news. Thanks for listening.
And it's time for Jazz Lives, right here on KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM.